Because it's time for Verbal Tap, the show that proves fighting is easier from outside the cage. I'm Kevin Phillips. With me, of course, Raph Esparza. Raph, how are you doing tonight?
I'm fucking home.
I'm so glad you're home. You got your flight got delayed 27 times? How many times officially?
It sent me 6 text messages. It was supposed to go out of Chicago at 9:25 p.m. their time. I got a text that goes, guess what? It's 3 a.m. now. It was atrocious. But you know what the weird part is? I was in surprisingly great spirits. I decided that I'm going to use this, and I was updating a status every second with a joke.
You went Facebook crazy.
Yeah, no. This is completely – you can see the descent of my sanity. But it was a blast. At one point – this is my favorite thing in the world. If you want to find it, find me on Twitter or on Facebook. But there's a great moment when the guy who's my shuttle, who's come super late and tried to get rid of me, but the guy who finally like gets me home in the shuttle hands me my luggage and goes, here you go. And I go, thank you. Have a good night. Morning. Day. Whatever the fuck. Oh, whatever. Just give me my fucking luggage. And that's how we ended.
If you're fans of the show, you can find us at Verbal Tapcast on Twitter or download us on iTunes. Leave us a review. It's the only way we know you're listening on iTunes.
Correct.
And if anyone out there works for iTunes, come up with a fucking way that we can track our shit, please. Thank you very much.
True fucking story.
Jesus, iTunes. Chapping my ass. You know why I'm super stoked for tonight's show?
Why?
Joe the Nose Wilk is on it, a Kansas native. So he actually was my first ever. He taught combatives at Kansas State University. It was the first semester they were doing it. And I was part of that first class that wasn't military. So they started teaching it to students. You know what class I had after it?
What's that?
Oceanography.
Bullshit class.
Well, specifically in the sense that I took it at Kansas State University, where you might notice there are no fucking oceans. And here's my problem with that entire class. Didn't mention sharks one time, Raph.
I can guarantee you that's not the worst class, general ed, that either of us have taken.
Probably not, but it was the most disappointing because I went from, like, combatives with these really cool younger instructors, and then I went to this guy that looked like Larry David's slightly less good-looking cousin.
That's pretty good.
Same exact haircut, and he was just up there just like, the ocean floor is a lot like Earth's floor. And I was like, I'm going to kill myself.
Nah, no, I'm totally going to beat you on this. I had a class called Earth's Dynamic Weather.
What does that mean?
Well, it's dynamic.
Hard to argue.
And I hated every part of it. I was just like, give me a science. And they go, how about Earth's Dynamic Weather? I said, that's a class? Like, what the fuck's wrong with this
school? Do I just look at pictures and identify things? Like,
So I do that. Goal? And the guy who was teaching it looked like Sidney Poitier.
Nice.
And he spoke with a very, like, today, class, we will be talking about Earth's dynamic weather. And I couldn't contain it. I mean, I did shitty in the class. And then guess what? To finish my requirement for science, this is how bullshit it was. Guess what I had to take?
Earth's dynamic weather 2?
No, natural disasters.
Oh, the follow-up, the sequel.
Yep. So ask me if I had to watch Twister, the movie, as a prerequisite for that class.
Absolutely not. No way. Yes, Twister? What, did they think it was a documentary? Was it that and The Wizard of Oz? Those were the two?
Do like a movie book report.
Jesus.
I chose mine on the bird flu. The television movie by ABC. Thank you. Bird flu, an American pandemic.
Oh, boy. Between that and oceanography, that was money well spent on our education.
We don't
anyway, Joe Wilk is going to be on the show. He's going to drop by here about 4 or 5 minutes. I have to ask you a serious question.
Yes, sir.
You think Benson Henderson won that fight on Saturday?
Completely. And when I say completely, I will say it like this.
Yeah, I was gonna. Please elaborate. I've been drinking, so I'm a little upset, but please elaborate.
That's fine. I'm not saying it wasn't a close fight. It was a very close fight. Anybody with a pair of eyes could tell that was a
Oh.
very razor-thin
Hey,
decision.
sports fans, Raf is going out on a bold ledge and saying this was a close fight.
Shut the fuck up and let me talk, you surly idiot. Here's what's happening. I'm telling you that round one definitely went to Gilbert.
Okay.
Round three and four, I believe, went to Benson. Round five, Gilbert. Round two is the one that is most up for debate. Would you agree to that?
No.
Okay, then go for it. Tell me what you think.
So, first of all, I'm looking at the official UFC count, and it has Benson Henderson at 68 strikes to Gilbert Melendez. By the way, we're going to have to talk about it's Benson Henderson and Gilbert Melendez, which is like two of the most juxtaposed names in history fighting each other. They have 68 strikes to 43, which is ridiculous.
So
And
you're looking
one.
at the same sheet that I'm looking at, and you are neglecting to mention significant strikes. Is that accurate?
Yes, I'm getting there.
Well, get
So,
there fucking faster.
okay, I have Melendez. I'm going to call him Melendez because Gilbert seems. I have him winning the first three rounds. At least the first two, no problem.
No, I see. That's where I think it gets there. And you know who else backs me up on this? Dana fucking White, who in an interview said the second fight was wonky, but he still scored it for our good friend Benson.
I don't give a flying fuck what Dana White scores
Hey,
the card at. He's more
that's
than
fine.
somewhat motivated. So, time out. I want everyone to please take verbal tap note history. Let's try that. Use take two. I want everyone to note verbal tap history, please, that Rap is citing Dana White as his judging aficionado here.
I'm just saying that there is somebody else who shared an opinion, and
And
it's
he
somebody who we
happens to
both know
be.
who agreed. He does own the company, but it's somebody who agreed that the main problem, I'm not even citing him as being the reason for my argument being right. I'm saying round two, even he agreed, was probably the one that was most confusing
I guess
in
let me
terms of
say
how you used it.
this. I felt like it was a tie.
And that's
And.
absolutely not true because nobody did enough to get an eight in any of these rounds. That's impossible. That's why there's five rounds. Mathematically, somebody has to get an eight for it to be a tie.
You felt like we had a winner leaving that fight.
God.
That's what
Okay.
you felt. You walked away from that fight being like, yeah, no, Benson Henderson is the champion.
I'm telling you, based on criteria and the stats that we both have in front of us, when you have five rounds, which means that there is the possibility, if it is a split decision, someone has to win three. I did think someone did win three mathematically because nobody had an eight round. More importantly, I agree it was a razor thin decision. But here is my overall argument, and this is for any championship fight. And I think this is why people don't like Benson in
Tie goes to the
general.
champion.
No, it's not tie goes to the champion. I think you definitively have to defeat the champ. I was not convinced that Gilbert put in enough work to do that, especially when in my brain I saw the second round. I was like, you know what?
Hey,
It looks weird, but I think that Benson pulled out that second round.
you're finally making some sense. I'll give you that
I've been
one
making
point.
sense.
No, you have not. I'll
I
give you that
have.
one, that you have to beat the champ. You do have to beat the champ, except Benson didn't necessarily beat Frankie Edgar all that much. And if we're citing back to our MMA history, I'm going to go back to a little Griffin versus Rampage.
I'm
When
completely aware
Griffin
of this
takes the
fight.
title, even
Can
though it was
we?
basically the exact same situation, I'm just saying there's no precedent to support that argument. It's a good argument that you have to beat the champ, but there's no precedent to support it.
But that's also when you have subjective judges. But what I'm saying is, in this situation, which we are still talking about, not other fights, we are
Benson
talking
versus
about the fact,
Gilbert.
correct. I decided that once you started referring to them as last names. I was only going to refer to them as first names.
Henderson versus Malone. I know, we've been really confusing, and it's not the best two names to do that with. But
I'm so into it, though. And I'm telling you, I just thought when I watched it, there was a winner. I think you could say there was a winner, even if it was razor thin. Because I don't think you can make the argument that Gilbert dominated that fight.
No, I'm not going to make – he dominated parts of that fight, but I'm not going to make the argument.
He was the aggressor, but that doesn't necessarily mean he was the person who should just be rewarded for being the aggressor.
So as our good friend Bubba McDaniel would say,
yes,
I tend to err more on the side of pride judging.
Yes, yes, I'm aware of your pride judging rules, but we are in those rules, so don't bring that up.
Where I look at the fight as a whole and say, who won the fight? That's what I ask myself. I could give two shits round by round because, I mean, what does that tell you? That you could masturbate for the last minute of the third round, and as long as you won the first two, you're gold? Like, that's just not the way life works. And I don't want to advocate for masturbating during fighting, Raph, which is obviously a position you share. So my point simply is, I thought Gilbert Melendez, I thought he won the fight.
It's so great when you realize that the person you are arguing with is playing checkers when you are too busy playing chess, my friend.
I think that was a metaphor of some kind, but
it is, and if you think about it, boom.
Yeah. So this is an MMA podcast, Raph. I'm going to have to ask that you stop using checkers and chess metaphors and stick to games with balls and things
like
that.
Because those are two games you're not familiar with.
I know the names of them both. So I am going to, moving past our petty differences, where in which I'm right.
And they are petty, and you are not.
Does Benson still ask his girlfriend, his fiance, whatever, does he ask her to marry him if he loses that fight?
Well, here's the one thing I'll give you for possibly there being some judge rigging.
There's way too many decisions right in a row, I'll say that, but go ahead.
The judges all of a sudden getting a note being like, is he proposing to her? Shit, we better let him win this.
We gotta give him that net. Well, what about that second round? Oh, fuck it. Who cares? No one really won the fight. Let's see a little proposal live and in person.
I vote and judge for love.
Yeah. And Dana White, I do like that Benson was like, thanks, Dana, for letting me do this. It's like, yeah, it didn't go. Did somebody forget to tell Joe Rogan?
I don't know what Joe's.
Could he did it look like he knew or not? That part was confusing to me.
It was tough to ascertain that. I just love that Joe is always a man on a mission because he's literally looking at him and be like, "That's great and all, but tell us about your fucking fight."
Hurry up and get back over here.
I do. Yeah. You know, one thing I don't think we talked about was the moment when she says yes, and first of all, doing a marriage proposal.
Which she neither said of us into have the done. Microphone, which was great.
I mean, she wanted to make out. Let's be clear about that. But I think the best part was prefacing it with just like, hey, babe, you know, I'm really not a great person all the time, but like, don't you wanna?
Yeah. Forever? Yeah, this is another time when you and I could really open up our sports marketing firms. It's like, it's true. Bensie. Use crisp action verbs there, champion. Don't go backwards and just be like, I'm not always a good person. But, and, you know, wait for a break in the applause. The crowd was still going crazy because you got down on a knee.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, for all we knew, you could just be injured and need a moment to rest.
There were some details. I would have preferred if she had said, well, you know, I was thinking about marrying this other guy, but he only has three attributes that I appreciate, and you have four, so you slightly edge him out in that category. That would have been an answer he understood more suitably. So maybe
I was undecided until
time.
I saw the tail of the tape bullet points.
Nice.
I now feel like we could do this. I also like the idea that, like, when he did say that, it just been, hey, I totally won this championship, so I think you should really come home with this because, let's be honest, you want to go home with somebody else who doesn't have a championship belt?
Yeah,
right?
And What do you think Gilbert Melendez, do you think they told him? Or was that a surprise for him and his cornering team too? I'd imagine it was less of a surprise. He was like, I just beat that motherfucker. And now he's proposing to his goddamn girlfriend and no one's
That's got
going
to
to
be
remember.
an awesome moment, especially if you're him and you're walking away and you go, oh, he totally wasn't going to propose, but then he won that fight. And just to put salt in my fucking eye, oh, I hate you, Benson. Bensy.
Benzie! All right, you've heard what Raph and I think. Tweet us, let us know. I still want more feedback. I mean, if you want to talk about the proposal, that's fine too. We're happy to joke about it for another 4 to 6 months.
We'll argue about the proposal if you really make a good enough case.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, Raph and I'll argue about anything if you're willing to. It's time to come full circle for me in my MMA podcasting career. Are you ready to
Oh.
bring Mr. Wilk onto the show?
Ready and happy to talk to him. Let's do it.
All right, Verbal Tap listeners, this is a special day for me. The first person to introduce me to jiu-jitsu, a fighter out of my native state of Kansas, on the line with Raph and I, Joe the Nose Wilk. Joe, how you doing this evening?
Doing good, man. It's fight week. I'm a little hungry, but other than that, man, I'm good. I'm ready to rock.
Yeah, you fight this Saturday, VFC. It's 39? What's the number?
Yes, I believe so. It's the first one ever, though, in Wichita, Kansas. And so it's a big deal for the state and the sport, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I've been Facebook blasting anyone I know in the Wichita area. For those listening, Joe Wilk is worth the price of admission. And hopefully you'll get somebody trapped in a guillotine. Talk to us a little bit about what your fight week preparations look like.
Man, fight week, all the hard work's over. So my fight week kind of consists of, not eating much because I cut a lot of weight and preparing myself for a big cut on Friday, and just staying in the groove. I do just enough to keep my shape where it's at, so I don't trail off at all. But we definitely have tapered down the training, and I try to sleep a lot if I can, just because I can't wait for the weekend to get here, and every minute seems like an hour when you're a few days away from a fight.
Yeah, I would really imagine.
Tell us a little bit about your opponent, who you're fighting, for those of us who don't know who you were fighting.
I'm fighting Doug Jenkins. He's a pretty well-known fighter out of the Dakotas up north, and he's got a win over a UFC vet. He TKO'd John Halvorsen in the first round. That's kind of how he got a name. That earned him a spot on RFA on Access TV a few weeks ago, and he actually dropped that fight. And I think it's a pretty good matchup for me. He's a tall, hippie looking dude, and he's scrappy, but I think I got the tools to definitely go in there and do my thing and get the win for sure.
Yeah, and if anyone is looking for some good highlights, just go ahead and Google Joe the Nose Wilk. You'll get some great entrants, including one of you taking a nap before the fight starts, which is my personal favorite. That was a fight out of Fort Riley, is that right?
No, actually, that one was at Memorial Hall in Kansas City, with Titan Fighting Championships, and that was a good one. That's the one that most people, I mean, that's the one I always have talked about the most, and it was really funny because I only came up with it the night before my fight in the hotel room. I called my girlfriend on the phone, and I said, "Hey, tomorrow when you come, I need you to grab a Snuggie and a teddy bear, and don't ask any questions." And she was like, "All right, so."
Joe, one thing is, that's such a great opening. Have there been other openings that you've thought about that you haven't been able to do yet? Like,
Yeah, man. Actually, I have thought a lot about. I fought on Fort Riley after that fight. It was the first Titan. It was the first show, really big televised show on Fort Riley. And I'm a combatives instructor out there. We did it on the airfield inside a hangar, and I felt like Guile from Street Fighter. There was like airplanes and helicopters and tanks and everything. And I got really caught up in the moment, and I was like, "Man, if I ever do this again, I'm coming in on a helicopter." So that's you're hearing it first here. If I ever get to fight on Fort Riley again, I'm coming in on a helicopter and gonna try to, come swinging out commando style on a rope or something before the fight.
Now, if you're coming out via helicopter, have you thought about the music that comes with it, or is that just the surprise?
you know, I never really think that far ahead about the music. I always just play something that's the kind of music that I'm listening to, and I'm going to know the words too, because I always, you know, lip sync and kind of do a little fake rap video whenever I come out. So I really, like, I have a, you know, whatever's kind of playing in my car during training camp or playing at the gym during training camp, I just usually pick one of those songs and roll with it. And if the song has some kind of a theme that I can put to that, then I try to make it happen and make it a little bit more clever that way. And it's worked out really good several times, so I just keep running with it.
I'm going to be really honest with you. I think this is a genius idea, and allow me to maybe pitch my one suggestion here. My one suggestion is to play the score from Arnold Schwarzenegger's classic Commando as you come down. Just saying.
or Apocalypse Now, like from the scene where all the helicopters are going in to smash everybody. That'd be awesome too.
Joe, all I'm going to ever do now is just send you ideas for how to...
That's great. So yeah, you know, Commando was a great documentary about a soldier of fortune. You know, I think that I learned a lot from that movie. I could possibly use that one. Anything with Alyssa Milano, even if she was like 5.
That's a good pull. That must be the fight you're talking about. Must be the one with like the Humvees in the background that I saw then.
Right. Yeah. Giant American flag and Humvees and everything. And they got some really cool photos from that. There's actually like posters up at Fort Riley and everything of that photo with me with the American flag and the Humvees and everything. It was really cool to get to do that. Yeah, you know, I put a lot of time into training soldiers out at Fort Riley and kind of trying to do my part. And you know, I run my gym here in town too, travel back and forth all the time, and being able to kind of mix those two worlds where I get to not just be a trainer and a coach, but actually compete at Fort Riley in front of the soldiers and do all that. It was definitely an honor, and I'm glad Titan, you know, they're going to continue to come back and do shows at Fort Riley, and I think that's awesome. It was such a success, and I'm just glad I got to be a part of it and put my fingerprints on it, so to speak.
Yeah, you guys are pretty much responsible for bringing mixed martial arts out into Manhattan, Kansas, and sort of the heartland. You've done a lot to put it on the map out there on the Midwest.
And yeah, you know, we're a bunch of small Kansas kids. You know, myself, Caveman Rickles, we're all from small little Kansas towns, and so we really try to rep our state. And over the years, we've been able to gain enough, you know, local fame and attention into our territory that we've attracted some big shows. You know, Titan comes into Kansas a lot, and Victory Fighting Championships is coming into Kansas now. So we're pumped, man, and we're just hoping that, you know, one day some of the biggest shows in the world will be right here in our home state, and that'd be great.
And we'll be the first to, if anyone from the UFC is listening, which we get a few. We get a good chunk of UFC. Joe the Nose Wilk, get him on some fight cards. What's your... Now, I know they know your name. I do know that. I've seen enough, at least from the reading standpoint, because you went down and trained in Florida. It sounded like you went and trained at some big training camps, and it sounds like the UFC knows your name. Do you know much about what the next step is for you as far as the fight world continues?
No, man, I have no idea. It's a crazy sport, man. You know, if I knew, I wish that I could get like a phone call and then people would just tell me, this is exactly what you need to do, or this is exactly who you need to beat. You know, I've been in situations 2 or 3 times in my career when I thought it was going to happen for sure, and it just didn't happen. And I have heard from the UFC, but it's never been a contract offer. It's usually just been, you know, that, hey, we're watching, or we're doing this, or we're doing that. And you know, I've been lucky and also have been able to speak with Bellator as well. And, you know, those are basically the two top dogs in the MMA community. And, you know, and that, obviously, eventually, that's where I want to plant my feet, is in one of the top organizations in the world. Whether that's the UFC or Bellator, time will tell. You know, I really like some things about both companies, and I really dislike some things.
I love the Bellator, you know, fights I've seen. The Bellator fighting is... It's got an energy level, and we definitely have that on our list to ask you about, because for people that may not know, you have started to already leave your mark, because in addition to your actually, you know, getting in the cage and fighting, you train a lot of fighters, and you were just cornering Dave the Caveman Rickles, who won his tournament. He won the Bellator tournament, which was really cool to watch. Knocked him out. Knocked him clean out. It was the pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable little journey. You know, we'd actually Dave had a fight before the tournament started. He was making the move down to 55, so they wanted him to have a fight beforehand at that weight class. So we did. Dave actually fought 4 times in 4 months for Bellator, and it was quite the journey. You know, we're out there for a week at a time for all those, and in between we're doing nothing but just training and getting ready for the next one. And you know, it was a major focus of mine at the time, was to help prepare him and get him ready for all that. And then it all went great, obviously, and he ended up winning the tournament in dramatic fashion. And it just everything fell into place. You know, we ended up the fight was in Tampa, and we were in the Clearwater Beach area during spring break to celebrate for that. And everything just was awesome. So it was they were great fights, man. And we have a lot of cool stories and great things that happened. And some of them I'll never be able to tell to anybody.
Sure.
it was awesome. And I'm just glad, you know, it's my turn to get to go out and fight this upcoming weekend. And you know, you're absolutely right. You're talking about the fights with Bellator. You know, I think that Bellator's new enough and fresh enough that it's a lot of fun to watch. And I think most of the fighters are still hungry. You know, I think that, in my opinion, from being in the fight game for a long time, I think a lot of people's goal is to get to the UFC. So when they achieve that, they've already reached their goal. I'm here. I did what I set out to do. And then I think they kind of relax, you know. And then, in my opinion, I think the Bellator fighters are still very hungry. And they're after the money and after the fame on Spike TV, and people are really putting it on the line out there. There's definitely not any boring fights. And plus, you got to love the tournament format. You got to love the fact that it doesn't matter who your coaches and training partners or manager or anything are. If you win your fight, you're in the next fight. And if you win that fight, you're in the finals. You know, it doesn't, you know, I see a lot, I think, in the other organization, in the UFC, that it's kind of sometimes who you know and not what you know. And, you know, I'll see some guy I've never heard of fighting on the main card in the UFC. Anytime that ever happens, you see a guy that you've never heard of on a main card or a guy with a questionable record on a main card, look no further than his corner men to find out how he got there. It'll be either a famous coach or a famous fighter in his corner. And I'm sitting there going, you know, meanwhile, there's guys in the Midwest, you know, I mean, I'm an example of it. I put over 10 years of my life into this, grinding every day. And, you know, I don't have a coach. I don't have a famous coach or anything like that that's going to kind of pave my way, you know. So I think that's one of the things I really respect about the Bellator fighters, is getting to spend a lot of time with them and a lot of the people that run the organization. It's a very fresh look at the sport, and people there earn their keep for sure.
There was something I thought that was so cool in the documentary where you were showing there's a documentary, for those who don't know. We'll post a link to it about you and your training camp, Combative Sports Center. And
right.
I really, really liked two things in particular. One, with you explaining the significance behind each of the championship belts and how it's a collective thing. Now, I'm sure that was extended to Dave as well when he ended up winning, right?
Correct.
Now, what was the vibe like for that? Because we didn't really get to see what that was like. Because the taping obviously wasn't the same time. Describe the scene when Dave did win. How did your community at the gym respond to that?
Oh man, it's nuts. You know, when you're far away like Tampa, you know, not first of all, a lot of people came. That was really cool. I mean, we probably had, you know, 20 or so people that were friends and family and training partners, maybe even more, that made the trip actually all the way out to Tampa, and that made it really cool. But here, locally in Manhattan, down in Aggieville, they host viewing parties for David's fights on Bellator, and everybody goes. And, you know, I haven't got to experience that, obviously, because I'm in David's corner during the fight, but
yeah.
From everything I've heard, the place just went nuts, and glasses were breaking, and chairs were flying, everyone was losing their mind. You know, Dave was losing that fight, and you know, obviously the ending was super dramatic. You drop a guy on his face at the last second of the second
last
round.
Possible yeah. second, but he was out. I mean, that guy was out.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, you know, it's funny. they were kind of like at the press conference and some other times people were talking about controversy. And I'm like, you know, the thing that woke that guy up was his face hitting the mat. He was knocked out. When your face hits the floor and it wakes you up, that's not, doesn't mean you're still in the fight, you know? And, right. And what few people know about Florida has some weird, some different MMA rules than most other states. And one of the rules that Florida has, and which was explained to us prior to in the rules meeting, was you can't be saved by the bell. So similar to boxing. In boxing, if you get knocked down with, you know, 6 seconds left, but you can't get up, it doesn't matter that the round's over. So that pertains to MMA as well. So if you watch the fight back, you know, the referee split Dave off of him because the bell had rung, but then he went to check on the fighter because he couldn't be saved by the bell. He's still laying on the ground, basically hands on his face, you know, half knocked out, and wasn't getting up to go to his corner and recover, so he stopped the fight. You know, it was I think it was a good stoppage either way, but especially with the fact that Florida has that rule that the bell doesn't save the fighter, you know, it was absolutely the right call, and people can call it controversy all they want. The check's hanging on the wall in the gym.
The guy was knocked out, and I was actually willing to acquiesce, except in the sense that I didn't necessarily know if the referee was stopping him because of the bell or if the referee was just like, that guy's done. Because Dave probably could have gotten maybe one more shot in. I mean, that guy, I was impressed because, yeah, you don't see that very often. A genuine knockout right at the end of the bell. So please pass along our congrats to the caveman. We did a nice recap. We've been trying to watch a lot of the Bellator fights too, just because they're intense. You see things like that you just don't see, and you said it, hungry is probably the best word.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, and that's, you know, that's the kind of personality that David has. You know, he's not the kind of kid to lay there and just give it up, you know. So he fights every second of every fight, and that's one of the reasons that he does so well. And that just goes to show you, you know, a lot of people would have just, you know, heard the 10-second clack and kind of rested up for the next round, and Dave doesn't have that attitude. He sees that I've got 10 seconds left to knock the guy's head off, and it paid off that time, and we got to throw down in Clearwater Beach for spring break and have a little bit of fun, so everything worked out.
That's awesome. You know, the second thing that I really wanted to ask you about was you keep all of the posters, and one thing that you were talking about, there's this just great moment of you talking about each of the posters, and that you don't just keep the posters of the fights that you win, you keep the posters of the ones that you lose at. Talk to us a little bit about that.
And you know, this sport, man, it's a funny, funny sport. And if you allow your ego to get too out of control, it really will cause you more harm than good. And something that I figured out as I was growing up in the sport, if I was going to be a good coach, what I needed to do was take the mistakes that I made, which I've made plenty in my career, and I needed to make sure that my fighters and the guys coming up underneath me didn't have to go through the same mistakes. You're going to have to learn lessons in this sport. Some of the particular lessons I've learned, I can teach that to my kids now ahead of time. They don't have to go and learn it the hard way like I did. And so that's why I embrace all my losses. When I come back, you know, if I lose a fight, I'm not the kind of guy that starts making excuses or saying, oh, you know, I just would have done this, or, you know, this happened during training camp and anything like that. What we do is we look at, you know, what the guy used to beat me or the mistake I made, and then we all train it and learn it, and we all learn why we're not going to let it happen to the next guy 2 weeks later when he fights. And at the end of the day, losing fights is not something I'm ashamed of. You know, there's a lot worse things I could be doing with my Saturday night. A lot of people on Saturday night, you know, are just going to the movies or going to the bars or, you know, maybe doing nothing at all, sitting at home. And if I go and get into a fight with another awesome fighter in front of a big crowd, in front of all these people, and really put it on the line, even if I do get my ass kicked, that's cooler than what 99% of the people in the world are doing with their Saturday night. So I'm proud of it, win or lose, and I'm not going to shy away from it. If this sport was easy and I was never going to lose a fight, it wouldn't be worth putting my entire life into it, you know? So I'm proud of fighting whether I win or lose. And I didn't start with the idea of going undefeated. And when I get the opportunity to fight tough guys, especially if I have a chance to maybe get famous from it, you can bet I'm going to scrap that guy every time.
Love it. Yeah. Definitely more exciting than what I was doing Saturday night.
Duh. Yeah. I was at a wedding. So it's not even... Joe, what is your record right now?
17-7 as a professional.
17-7 as a professional with how many amateur fights also?
I was 10-1 as an amateur. I lost my first amateur fight ever, and then I won 10 in a row. And that was basically, I won a world title, amateur world championship, and decided, they also suggested that it was kind of time to go pro, and that's when I made the move. If I could go back, that's one of my mistakes, I think, that I was just talking about. If I could go back, I would have fought many more amateur fights for sure. I would have gotten more experience and gotten a lot more of the lessons I needed to learn out of the way in the amateurs, because some of the really basic lessons of fighting I learned in my professional career, and it shouldn't have been that way. But, you know, I was young. The sport was very young. I was very young, and I lacked some guidance. And now that's why I try to make up for that with all of my kids at the gym. But, you know, also with my record, you know, most of those losses, six of my losses were 155 pounds. I've only lost once ever at 145, and I actually avenged that loss. So technically, in, you know, my crazy mind, I'm undefeated at 145. So I'm
was that happy Aaron with that. Steele? Was that the?
Yeah. Dropped the first time I'd ever. You know, it was actually the first time I'd ever been past the second round, and we fought all the way till the end of the fourth round. I basically kind of just gassed out and lost that fight, and so I always wanted that one back, and I went back and, you know, beat the brakes off of them and finished them in the first and avenged that. And I feel really tough, kind of bulletproof at 145, so I needed to stay there. Unfortunately, I have just had some, fortunately and unfortunately both, I guess, I've had some pretty cool opportunities come up at 55, and then I'm sitting there going, oh, well, I won't have to cut as much weight, you know, so I've taken 55 fights, but definitely going to try to stay at 45.
You guys will have to ignore my dog in the background. Do you?
Yeah, your dog doesn't like me at 55 either, apparently.
I don't think
no,
so.
No, she's yeah. Like, he's mean at 145. He's got to stay there. Do you, if you had your preference, you'd fight at 145, you just kind of have to do, well, you don't have to, I mean, you choose to do both just to take on some stronger opponents.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this last fight that I lost to Joe Ellenberger at 155, and you know, I stated clearly to everybody 100 times that I was never fighting at 55 again, because I don't really have to cut weight to get to 55. I can get about to that weight, and then I've got to cut about 10 pounds to make 145. But when that fight came up, I saw this opportunity. I could avenge a loss. I could beat a guy with a name. I could beat him in his hometown. The last guy that had beat Joe Ellenberger went straight to the UFC. And so all these things, you know, I was just like, I've got to do it. I can't turn down. You know, I could have taken a much easier fight that same night for probably the same amount of money. But that's not why I'm in this sport. And that's not why I think anybody should be in this sport. So I like to challenge myself and, you know, put it on the line. I know I use that term a lot, but that's kind of how I, you know, the way I look at my career. So when I get a chance to, you know, kind of toe that line, I'm going to do it and try to make it happen for myself. And that was the kind of opportunity that fight presented. Didn't go my way. And, you know, here I am back down to 45. I'll smash some guy again and continue that run. And who knows, it could happen again someday. But for right now, hopefully I can stay at 45 for a while.
Well, yeah, and the Ellenberger is not a new name to anybody in the fight world. They are familiar with that family, so that's pretty cool. I like that. I didn't know you chose to go back and forth towards weight classes, but that does take us to Raf, and I have to ask you, because both Raf and I are jiu-jitsu guys, you got to tell us about your finishing move. How many opponents have you now finished with the guillotine?
Oh my gosh, I don't even have any idea, but yeah, out of 17 pro wins and 10 amateur wins, that's 27, I would say probably 20, you know.
And probably some grappling matches in between that I can only imagine have resulted in some guillotines as well.
Oh yeah, I've definitely have been through, you know, several brackets and tournaments with, you know, like three or four matches in a bracket and won all of them by guillotine. You know, that's happened several times in my career with submission grappling as well. And I don't neglect the guillotine and the gi too. A lot of people think it's only an MMA or a no-gi move, but I'm able to actually pull it off with the gi a lot too. I think the gi kind of works to my advantage with it sometimes. And so it's definitely the main move that I've used in my career, and I think it's a tribute. You can attribute a lot of my quick fights to that too, because you know the guillotine choke is a move that you don't have to dominate position to get to. You don't have to, for example, take somebody down past their guard or take their back and to be able to get rear naked choke or mount them and to be able to get an arm bar. If they mess up for half a second, you can kind of just grab it and go. And so you know that's definitely a move I've always been really comfortable with. And also when I was younger and a punk kid, it was also my main street fight move. So I just kick guys in the nuts and then choke them with guillotine. So you, I got a lot of practice with that too.
Joe, can I ask, because as someone who's proficient at absolutely zero in jiu-jitsu, what goes through your mind when someone essentially sets it up for you? Like, what is the thought process for you when that happens?
I'll tell you, man, and this is 100% honest truth, and people that have trained long enough can tell you the same thing. If you're thinking about it, it's too late and the opportunity already passed. Things happen before your brain has time to process it when you've been training so long through muscle memory and everything like that. So most of the time, I'm kind of like in the move and making my adjustments before I even really realize what's going on with it. And that's the key to a lot of situations with submissions, especially like a guillotine choke, is it's the little adjustments. It's the little things that you do differently than the people see all the time. And you know, having the right angle and controlling, you know, fighting their defense the right way, so to speak. And so I don't really think about it a lot. It's just that when it's there, my body reacts to it, you know, even to a fault. Sometimes, you know, I've actually lost fights because I've got stuck on bottom so many times going for the guillotine choke. But it's just as ingrained in me. If I catch the neck, I go for it.
Because that's the thing I'm always thinking about, is I always think about, you know, being so proficient at it. And this is why I do the comedy side. In my brain, I always think like, oh, he gave it to me. Yeah. Everybody, look at this real quick. It just happened.
They send you a nice signed note that says, I'm going to extend my neck when I shoot for a single leg. That's going to be a great time to guillotine. That's normally how my jiu-jitsu matches work. It's really nice. Oh, yeah.
Well, the thing about chokes, well, most submissions really, is that the very worst thing you can do is get panicky and do, you know, like jump from the frying pan into the fire. But I think people are worried enough about my guillotine at this point that when I catch people's heads in it, they start getting panicky, and that's the worst thing you can do. And so I think definitely a lot of times people kind of put themselves, like I said, from the frying pan into the fire, just struggling, trying to get out so hard. And instead of doing, you know, the proper defense, they're, you know, basically freaking out, and that allows me to take advantage.
You also, this is circa 2007 combatives at 8:05 in the morning, which was the class I was signed up for. But we were talking about guillotine, and you and Dave Darnell were sort of just joking around. You had apparently just beaten the life out of some personal trainer that stepped into the, it was a ring, it wasn't even a cage, because it was just a bar in Kansas City. And you guys called the guillotine the way to tell if you're just a pretty boy showing off your muscles in the cage. I always thought that was a really gruesome way of explaining how efficient the guillotine was, but I also haven't forgotten it yet. Do you remember that at all?
And absolutely. You know, like, you know what's funny, man, is that I do remember that. And since you were in the 805 class, I probably smell like beer half of the time.
Literally, half the time. You guys, you made no jokes about it. Because there would also be, Dave always would kind of start it promptly at 8:05, and you'd kind of stroll in, usually right at 8:15 with a Red Bull and some sort of snack.
Yeah, Dave was always really great about that. That was kind of how it worked. When he was here, he was the brains of the operation, and then he'd kind of just like point at somebody and be like, go fight that guy, and I'd go beat the guy up, and that was kind of how we rolled for a lot of years, and we were a good little team with that. And then, you know, Dave actually, he's in charge of the entire Air Force for hand-to-hand combat, which is really cool. So he took a really cool job doing that. He's out at the Air Force Academy, and then when that happened, I had to do a lot of growing up kind of overnight, because all of a sudden, I was running the gym by myself and running the K-State program and coaching the Fort Riley team, and I used to kind of just split duty on all that, and then all of a sudden it was all on me. And so I did kind of a lot of growing up overnight, you know, and now I only smell like beer on the weekends.
Nice. Well, that's probably a good time to pivot back and talk a little bit more about the combatives. We've alluded to it a couple of times, but when Joe says he taught combatives, I think you're kind of underselling it. For about the past decade, you've been instrumental in training, it's got to be thousands. I mean, it's got to be a high number, because Fort Riley is a big base out in Kansas where, I mean, it's all infantry and bombing. It's those guys go to the front line, I guess is the best way to say it. And it's high turnover rate.
Thousands of soldiers, thousands and thousands of soldiers over time, you know, and it's been great, man. It's been a great experience. That's how I ended up out here in this area. It's a cool way to make money doing jiu-jitsu, and at the same time, I feel like, you know, I get to feel like I'm doing something for my country without actually like strapping on a gun and going and doing anything. So I get to kind of do my part with what I know, and it definitely makes me feel good about myself. And then it's just a different level of motivation out there with those guys. When you train a guy for a mixed martial arts fight, it's a sport and a competition. The kind of fights that we're training for out there are totally different. The loser usually dies. And so, you know, getting to kind of train people like for these, like, you know, fights to the death, these hypothetical fights to the death, really increases the motivation and basically makes it more awesome. So I really enjoy it, and it's been a huge part of my life, continues to be to this day, actually.
And you guys have actually helped chain their competition team and have gone to Fort Bragg a couple of times to go represent a little Fort Riley combatives.
Yeah, we've been one of the top teams in the Army since the competition started. You know, we won the whole thing one year. We've taken a couple second places, really close. They actually didn't use us last year. It was kind of weird. Contract stuff kind of got messed up, and they didn't use us to coach the team last year, and the team really dropped the ball. It was one of the worst teams in the Army. But then my phone rang. So I got the call, and I'm back out.
Funny how that works.
Back in control, and you know, I'm out there every morning, out there training soldiers, preparing the team, preparing the guys for not just MMA fights, but also Army competition, and it's cool, man. It's like I said, it's a high level of motivation. It's something I'm very proud of. No one likes getting out of bed at 6:30 in the morning, but, you know, to go out and do that, and also, not to mention, I get paid to do it, is a pretty good gig. You know, I do what I love. I do a lot. I wear a lot of different hats, but technically, it's all jiu-jitsu at the end of the day, so I get to do my favorite thing in the world for a living, so I don't have a lot of complaints. I'm really a pretty lucky guy.
I think that's pretty cool, man. I mean, just hearing about that stuff and comparing that to knowing also the entertainment side of it. Now, you like to say that you are knowledgeable at the entertaining side of MMA. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I just I felt like that's what was missing. You know, I still feel that way to some extent. You know, I feel like, you know, you hear the same stories over and over again. You know, you get a guy, and he tells you how he's fighting for his family and how his dog died and how, you know, he went to church and they told him to do this, and then he puts his hood up and he wears a tap-out shirt, and then he goes out to the cage and fights, and then he thanks God, and then he goes home, and, you know, that's kind of the whole story over and over again.
I mean,
and
we definitely have a drinking game for that story. Anytime we hear somebody talk about those things, we take a drink.
Yeah, during the fights, obviously.
Yeah, you do plenty of drinking, man. You definitely do plenty of drinking. And so for me, I was like, you know, forget this. You know, I was like, I'm just going to kind of have fun with it. And that's kind of how it all started. And then the reaction that I was getting most of the time in the Midwest was unless I was fighting in my own area, when I was going to Missouri and going to Omaha and going down to Oklahoma, I was basically getting booed all the time. And I was like, oh, you know, if these guys are going to boo me, I'm going to give them something to boo about. And so I kind of started playing heel and, you know, playing bad guy in all these towns in the Midwest. And I was just eating it up, man. It was so much fun. And that's how I kind of realized, like, man, there's really something to this. You know, when I'm at home, I can kind of, you know, people love me for this. And when I'm out of town, they hate me for it. And either way, it seems like the crowd's always loud. So, you know, like, I've always kind of said I don't care if people are booing or cheering, as long as the volume's high in the building, that I'm doing my job. And so I really tried to bring, you know, sports entertainment to the sport of MMA. And I also, you know, that my guys all kind of follow suit. You know, I always encourage my guys to come along with me to my radio interviews. I always take amateurs and stuff along with me to radio and news interviews if I can. I think it's a big part of it. You know, I never miss a chance for an interview. You know, here we are right now doing one. I do this every night of the week. If you guys called me every night of the week, it's one of the things I love to do.
Don't give us that invitation.
Yeah, be careful extending too much.
Hey, try me. I was just on a show last night. I told him that they should call me every Sunday. I want to start prank calling famous fighters. That's what I want one of my shticks to be, is prank calling famous fighters and trying to get them riled up.
Joe, when you say that you're being a heel, which is classic wrestling term for bad guy, can you describe some of the things that you do that really play up the fact that you're being the bad guy? Like, what is it that you do?
I basically act ghetto in the Midwest, and that's like the first part. That's really easy. And then the other thing I do is I don't talk about, you know, in my interviews and things like that, say, oh, I'm just here to do my best, and I hope that his training camp's going well. I kind of make fun of the guy I'm going to fight, and I say things like I'm going to go to his hometown and smack him in his mouth in front of his mother, and then everybody takes this sport so seriously that they get all huffy and puffy about it, and I'm just trying to be funny. You know, I don't take myself that seriously. So, and I like fighting. I'm not scared to fight. I think a lot of people are just so scared to death they can't have any fun at all. So, you know, I just started going with it, and it just has kind of grown its own head. You know, it's a kind of a monster of its own now. I basically play a character when I fight. And that's fine with me. I actually love it. I get to kind of step away from myself and be Joe the Nose for these events and for the after parties. And it's really fun to kind of pour myself into that sometimes. And then I can always just come back down to the real world anytime I need to and just be the normal guy at home and everything like that. So it's fun for me. It keeps some separation between my professional life and my personal life. Because it's almost like two different people. So I think people that know me well know that I'm pretty decently humble, and I don't really have a lot of enemies, and I'm not really a bad guy. But if you put me in a situation where I'm going to go into Omaha and fight a guy from Omaha, and they're going to be booing me and trash-talking me, they're going to get it back from me twice as bad, you can bet.
Well, let me ask you this, because believe me, if it was just talking shit and not having to fight, I would be a world champion.
But it would be pretty good. You're good at the talking shit angle.
It's the idea when they go, all right, back that up with training. I'm like, yikes, I'm out of here.
Yeah, there's all that punching and kicking.
It's too much. But Joe, I have a request for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right. Would you be able to cut a promo based off of all of your WWE experience and your fighting experience attacking myself? Now consider me to be your opponent. You don't know much about me, but I'll give you some details. I am Mexican, about 5'9", 5'10", if I've got good shoes, and I think I'm funny.
You also have an oversized head. Your head is larger than it should be.
Not helping me, Kevin. Not helping.
Tell you this. I mean, I think since you're, you know, 5'9 and Mexican, you probably don't own good shoes. And if you don't want to back anything up with training, that doesn't surprise me either, because most people with big heads and big mouths don't back anything up that they see. And that's kind of the difference between me and most people, is that I can talk and walk, and I smack people in the mouth that want to come at me with cutting promos. So if you got something for me, you know, I'm ready to do that anytime.
Yeah, you know what? I do have something.
That's terrifying.
For you, okay? So, I'll tell you this right now. Yeah, I don't have nice shoes. Okay, thanks. Didn't think about that till now. No, hold on. I'm working my way through this. Hold on.
Okay. Take your time.
Joe, the Nose. What's that all about?
Killing it. You're killing it right now.
Just destroying it right now.
See, I thought you were the comedian of the group. It sounds like you're about as good at comedy as he is at jiu-jitsu. You guys need to get some experience underneath yourselves.
Hey, how did I get knocked in that?
You guys guys are white belts.
Oh, it's all
in
fun
life.
And games until heaven.
You guys are right? You guys are blue belts at the radio. You guys are blue belts at the radio and white belts at life.
That was way better if you would have gotten in one take, my friend. Joe, let me ask you this. When you do all of this stuff, is there ever a moment that you want to break? Is there ever a moment that you just want to smile and just like break character? I think that's got to be the hardest thing about doing that.
Yeah, there absolutely is. I've done it before, you know, like people watching, or you guys too, if you like on YouTube, I think it's still on YouTube, you can probably find it. Anyway, somewhere you can find my Victory Fighting Championship fight where I fought a guy named Pete Grimes, and I got booed so bad. I mean, I take the guy out and choke him out in the first round, and then the entire place is just booing me, and this guy's filming it on a camcorder because, like, this is back in the day, and they're booing me so bad. And then I cut, like, a five-minute promo after that, and I just, like, the first thing I did was I built up my opponent, and I built up the crowd, and I thanked them so much, and then I just turned on them and smashed everybody in the whole crowd. And the place, like, it was nasty. Like, they were losing their minds, booing and going crazy, and they're throwing drinks and everything. And right in the middle of it, I'm just cheesing and laughing, you know. And then we also, you know, but sometimes it's not just a joke. You know, in Kansas City, we had to get police escorted out of a building because I cut a promo in a little like redneck bar outside of Kansas City, and things turned really, really bad. The people started rushing the cage, and all my, you know, all my teammates and all the security people and everything had to like rush me to the back, and then all of a sudden the police showed up and had to like give us a police escort. And you know, once that happened, of course I was like flipping everybody off and running my mouth because I had the cops with me at that point. But yeah, so it's like it's all fun and games until people start rioting, and then it gets a little hairy sometimes.
Is it also possible you had been drinking at that time when the people started to turn on you at the bar?
Well, you can bet for sure that one of the very first things that I'm going to do after a fight, typically before I even have shoes on or get to the back of the building, I usually have drinks in my hand. You know, I put a lot into these training camps, and I'm very well behaved through these training camps as far as dieting and training and not partying at all, and I'm ready to kind of cut loose when I get the fight behind me, and I know I've got some time. I'm usually ready to cut loose pretty good, so chances are pretty good that any time after a fight you find me, I'm gonna probably be at a pretty high level of intoxication.
And that's part of what I love about what you bring to the fight world. There's a great photo of you on Facebook. This is how, and here's what I think why people ultimately respond. In addition to the fact that you do call out cities, which I really love, whenever you're going to Omaha, you always get them going and get them riled up. You do seem, you're very genuine in your approach to all of the fight world. There's a great photo of you after you win a fight eating a double cheeseburger and getting a tattoo.
Yeah.
Which I think is just an iconic, that's exactly what I would do if I had just gone through all of this sort of insanity. Because cutting weight and all of the work you do to get prepared for a fight is pretty demanding. I mean, it's it takes a lifestyle shift. So you are not this. You don't just talk a good game. I really appreciate the photos that we get to see and the YouTube videos that back up all of your stories.
But I do have one big question though. We hear all of these times, and I think even that one moment in the documentary, you talk about the idea that you have all these stories that you can't talk about. And you even told us one tonight. Is there a story that you can tell us that's so ridiculous, us here at Verbal Tap right now?
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, I mean, I have a million of them. I'm just trying to think of the ones where I don't have to drag anybody else through the mud that I could potentially get in trouble.
No, that's the good stuff.
The story of Andy Weifold having to choke you out and take your wallet from you was, like, I was almost in tears hearing that story revisited on the documentary.
Yeah, that night was pretty insane, you know, like, that was when I was peeing in the trash can and almost got arrested. And then we ended up in the wrong part of St. Louis that night. I kept jumping out of the car trying to fight people that I shouldn't have been. We were lucky we didn't get shot. And so, yeah, they,
that story was very edited because, you know, that the part that we didn't tell is that we made a wrong turn and got lost. And then when people, you know, would go to a gas station or something to ask for directions, and we were kind of in the ghetto of St. Louis, I was out in, you know, out of the car as soon as the car stopped and basically running my mouth to, you know, a bunch of gangbangers and stuff. And so they didn't choke me out one time. They choked me out over and over and over again, basically just to keep me unconscious. And then I'd wake up and start freaking out again. And yeah, we woke up that next morning and I was just so hungover. I broke my phone. This is the part that didn't get covered in that. So I'd thrown my phone at this undercover, or not undercover, but off-duty cop that was driving us so we didn't drive drunk. And I was just madder than hell at her for not letting me drive. And so I threw my phone at her and it broke. Well, I had to get a new phone. So we go to this Sprint store, and I'm still half drunk in the morning. And I had my belt on, and I go walking in the store. My buddy's like, "Hey, man, you gonna take your belt off?" And I was like, "Hell no. It can't hurt, you know?" So I walk in, and I walk into the Sprint store just reeking like booze and, you know, dirty clothes and a championship belt on. And the guy's like, "Wow, you know, no one's ever came in here with a championship belt." And I just kind of started talking myself up. Next thing you know, I'm back in the car like 10 minutes later with a brand new phone for free. I didn't pay for it at all. And meanwhile, a couple of the guys who were with us are just throwing up everywhere in the parking lot. And that's when we saw the nice little family picnic that was going on like 30 feet from us. And, you know, Timmy and Ginny or whatever, these little kids are just sitting at the picnic table watching all these grown men throw up one after another, like the domino effect, you know. And
I just like that one is still wearing a championship belt throughout the entire ordeal.
Yeah, I don't think I took that thing off. That was my very first one. I don't think I took that off for a long time. That fight was actually, you know, this weekend, Miles Jury won on the undercard of the Fox Channel. That's the guy I fought that night to win that belt. And so it was a big win. He's a tough kid, and we definitely did our celebrating for sure. In St. Louis back in the day, here's another little untold story, is a good friend of mine, John Minky, introduced us all to Chili Willy's, which apparently is a staple of the St. Louis drinking community, and that's where you flip a shot glass upside down and you pour Bacardi 151. It's just slightly beveled, so it'll hold a little bit of 151 on the bottom of the shot glass, and then you snort it instead of drinking it.
Jesus.
So we were all snorting Chili Willy's, which is Bacardi 151, basically straight to your brain, and no wonder I had to get choked out over and over again. But there you go, there's a story. And kids, if you're listening at home, snort Chili Willy's, do it, it's good for you.
Because here's my thing, I want to option, if no one has already optioned, the rights to your stories when we get to that point when you're ready to do memoirs.
Yeah, no kidding, I'd watch that pilot. That'd be pretty great.
No, I definitely have plans for that. Here's the issue, is that I'm not sure if it's the partying or the punches to the head or just my age, but I'm really starting to struggle with my memory. What I'm going to do is get, like, everybody together and be like, okay, here's my version of the story. Let me hear your version of the story, and then we'll kind of mix them together and eventually make a movie out of it. That's one of my lines I give to people, you know, if people don't want to come on a trip for the fight, they're like, "Oh man, my wife won't let me come." And I'm like, "It's cool, man. You're not going to be in that scene of the movie, though. So just remember this when you're not in."
I like that you may be the only person to create a reverse intervention. People just come to you and be like, "No, seriously, guys, we got to figure out what happened, and we've got to do more of it."
Yeah, let's do some Chili Willy's to get the ice broken. Snorting Bacardi 151 is terrifying, but
that is. Yeah, but
it's not a great idea. We also do shots on the rocks. That's one of our big things, is shots on the rocks. And that's just, you order a mixed drink and then you just chug the whole thing, and we call it shots on the rocks. We're always getting people to do it. That's where the finish your drink line came from after all my fights, is, you know, everybody that rolls with us knows that, you know, when something big happens, it's everybody just finishes their drink. So, you know, I figure everybody should join in on the fun. It's kind of my own little drinking game that I do with everybody. If I finish a fight, then everybody should finish their drink. It's the least everyone can do.
That's a great thing.
Completely agreed, and we will be keeping an eye on Twitter to see. Make sure people are giving us results on your fight this weekend. We want live results as it's going on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Victory Fight Championships is actually really good about that, about social media and everything. And they need a damn TV deal is what they need, because VFC puts on great fights, and there's a lot worse shows with TV deals, basically. You know, so hopefully, I'm sure that it
Gypsy
will be all
Sisters
over
just got re-upped for another season, so Lord knows. I think we can fight. We can find VFC an audience. That's all we have for you tonight. We're coming on 50 minutes. We really appreciate your time, and we know you're, you know, fighting this Saturday, so your time is valuable at this stage, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, literally any time, man. I'm not joking about that. Let's do it again, and then next time I see you guys in person, Chili Willy's for everybody.
That's the other thing I was going to say. I will be back in Kansas this fall. I would love to swing out and come train at CSC at some point.
Of course, man. Of course. That's going down for sure. Anytime, man, and then we'll go out and hit the Ville.
Like now we're talking. That's
hey,
perfect.
Man, all right, same thing. Make it out to LAODC. You're good, buddy.
Go watch him fight Joe the Nose Wilk. VFC this Saturday in Wichita. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Anytime, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Good night, man.
That was Joe the Nose Wilk. This is the part of the show where Raph and I talk about the guest.
That was pretty awesome. Yeah,
pretty
man.
Cool guy. Yeah.
How do you feel after all that? Do you feel like you've come full circle?
Oh, it's euphoric. To his credit, and we've already, this is, you know, we've dismissed him off the line. Now we're at the point, well, he hung up.
Don't say we've dismissed him. That's an
awful It's a weird way to say it. We've ended the call, but even it still sounds like there's the interview's concluded.
We're never
going
to get other guests on this show. We just dismissed him.
we
gave him his papers, and now he's out of here.
He actually does a great job marketing himself as a fighter, but he kind of almost understates how much he does out for just the jiu-jitsu world in general. So he was big. He always advocated it during the combatives. He would sort of explain to you the parts of jiu-jitsu versus wrestling. He was really a great teacher.
I mean, honestly,
a ton of fun.
The documentary, all I could think about was, I feel like I know this guy's gym, and I feel like I know the caliber of folks that's in there. So I mean, we're both those people who love seeing that at other jiu-jitsu gyms.
Yeah, it's like, I want to go to that jiu-jitsu. That's what your inclination was like, that's a place I want to go train.
Yeah.
Which is a really cool feeling. So, you know, to the whole CSC family, hope they're listening. We really appreciated some time we got to spend with Joe Wilk, and hopefully it's start of more to come.
We'll be happy to have him come back and even do
definitely
another a review of all of that, and also to have a promo off.
Yeah, maybe we're going to have to – we got to get our talking shit game up. I don't think we were quite –
You were not helping me.
I was in awe. It's like fighting someone, you know. It's when GSP fought Matt Hughes, and this is exactly the same situation, interviewing the guy that used to teach me combatives. Exact same situation. I was just a little star-strutted, you know, star-studded. I was – guy started my he was part of the initial spark towards jiu-jitsu.
Well, you know what, I
can't arbitrarily
I am your what? Partner on this podcast. You need to back me up.
Okay, I'll work on it. I'll get
thank
better.
You
yeah. No, you got those people, because and this is a good I'll save them for shout outs, but I got back finally after all of our world travels you and I have been doing. I finally got back to the BJJ MMA training center. Missed
awesome.
It, right? That's the place that sort of cascaded my jiu-jitsu career into. That's when I fell in love. So thanks to the guys out at BJJ MMA Academy. It is great to be back. And
we're not there yet.
Yeah. We've got one more thing to talk about. It's this, I don't know if people have heard about it, but it's called UFC 159.
What's that?
It's this, there's this up-and-comer named John Bones Jones. Seems like he's got a lot of talent. I'm not an expert, but he's fighting Chael Sonnen this Saturday. who do you have? Do you have John the Bones Jones, our champion? I don't even know how many times he's defended the belt.
He would actually be possibly tying a record by Tito Ortiz for most defenses if he ends up doing it this week. And Chael, actually, in an about-face turn, in one that we all expect, he complimented him and said that he's better than Tito and in some ways actually maybe better than Anderson Silva as well. How about that?
Wow. I'm on the eve of being called a lifetime steroid user. I think that's big of Chael. So are you excited about this fight?
Completely. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
First of all, I've been waiting for it for a long time. And I know that there are a lot of people who might say that Chael didn't deserve this title shot.
No.
Would you agree to that?
Yeah, I would agree that there are people saying it and that I'm not wholesale behind the fact that he deserved this title shot, yes.
Sure. But he's doing it. Yeah. So we might as well just entertain it, right? Like, it's happening.
I mean, none of us thought he was going to beat Anderson Silva, and he came one slippery triangle choke away from doing that. So
he was pretty close to being there and became a number one contender for Silva's belt twice. So that's something that's notable, right?
Yeah, I honestly just I feel like he's I think he's transitioning from fighter in the game to personality coach. I think that's what we're going to see as this fight progresses. It just doesn't feel like he's got the intensity he had. I know he's not talking quite the same amount of shit. It's just there's a spark that used to be, there was a fire behind Chael's eyes that it was like, that guy looks like he genuinely thinks he can beat Anderson Silva. It didn't look like an act. It feels like an act this time. It feels like we're all just sort of parading around this facade that he has any business being in the ring, in the cage with John Jones.
Or maybe that's just part of the Chael psychology that's happening now.
I fucking hope so, because I think this is going to be... It would be nice to see John Jones knock him out again. Knock somebody out.
Yeah. I will say this. I think Jones wins.
What round?
I'll say second.
I'm going first round Jones knockout.
I don't want it to be first. Because in my craziness of brains, wouldn't you entertain a world where everything's turned upside down for a little while? Because everything else is so fucking stagnant. All of the other championship belts are pretty much coasting. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, if you're asking me what I would prefer to see?
Prefer, yeah.
Oh, I'd prefer to see Sonnen with the belt.
Because
without question.
Think of the possibilities. I'm not saying you have to like him or subscribe to his nonsense.
But the
just
next 6 months are going to be gold.
And the next fights become crazy interesting because you know at any given time he could lose that belt.
Oh, definitively. Plus, it would just be nice to see Jones go through a little bit of struggle before he owns the MMA world for the next decade.
But on the other side, everybody loves a dominant champion, whether they want to admit it or not.
Not at 25. I hope he. I don't know how old he is, but I think he's pretty young. I want him to lose.
Super
once.
Young. You do? I mean, that's fair.
For the same reason I want Benson Henderson to lose. I'm just tired of watching people chip away at points. Like John Jones. Excuse me. That's not fair. John Jones finishes his fights. But I just. I don't know. I want to see some fire. Because when was the last time we saw Jones fight? Was it against Vitor?
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we also have Bisping versus Belcher, Nelson versus Congo, which I'm looking forward to. Every time you can see Big Country Nelson versus Congo,
yep,
you're really watching what makes America great, and I always appreciate that. So it should be a pretty good upcoming UFC 159.
Yep, and we're going to have plenty of coverage come next week.
Once again, we have to say thank you to those of you that have listened, tweeted us, gotten on to iTunes. It is not forgotten. We appreciate all of the people we talk to on Twitter. And it's always hilarious because Raph does the lion's share of the Twitter work. And I just like reading it and going through it and seeing some of the hilarious stuff. A lot of the audience is out there chiming in with us. So we consider you friends, and we appreciate it. For those of you that are new to the show, go to iTunes. Give us a little rating. Get us on Twitter, Verbal Tap Cast.
Yep.
We are so excited, and we are in the process of building a new website, getting some video stuff out there, so big things. It's a good time to jump on the Verbal Tap. I'm not going to call it a bandwagon. I'm going to call it more like a band skateboard, but jump on. Let's get some space.
We should just get bumper stickers that say, jump on,
Verbal Tap. Jump on. Shout out to, well, I already did the BJJ and MMA. Really looking forward to BJJ Finders stuff that they've got coming out. Working on an app. Nice. The website's getting crazy, so Andrew's rocking it over there. Thanks to No Concept out in Maryland. Keep an eye out for CSC and Joe Wilkes Gym over there in Manhattan. Yep. And thanks again. And big thanks to our guest, Joe Wilkes. Yeah?
Breaking news right now. This literally just happened.
This just happened.
We had David Rickles, caveman.
The caveman.
Bellator.
Champion. Champion over at Bellator. Just won the tournament.
We literally were just talking with Joe about him. He's now following us. We sent a note to him. He'd love to be on the podcast.
Hell yeah.
We will have him on the podcast.
Yeah, I make it a principle to always invite people named the Caveman onto the podcast. That's just that's a rule I live by.
I think it's a rule that should be a commandment.
So listen up very soon for Dave, the Caveman Rickles, the champion over at Bellator, another CSC guy. It's big things happen over here. The Verbal Tap community, because these are fun fighters, and we really like hearing their side of things. Thank you for that great breaking news, Raf. See, there's more that unites us than divides us. We don't just hate each other because of our strong disagreements about who's winning fights. You have any shout-outs to make over there?
Yes, sir. I would like to thank the Midwest. All of it.
You're welcome.
Shut up. You don't get to speak for the Midwest. No, I'd like to thank Sue McCarthy for hosting us and allowing us to have a nice weekend out there. The incomparable Mr. Will Cook, who's a mentor of mine, who's just awesome. I want to thank a few of the people on Twitter. Stephen Richards, did you get this? Stephen Richards said this about our podcast. It is a podcast where MMA discussions, analyzing, and impressions are second to none.
Nice.
Think about that for a second.
Okay.
That's pretty awesome. I'd like to thank John Anik, who actually sent us a note back, said he was totally cool with us doing an impression of him. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. Some people get edgy about it. I get edgy about it.
You get it? Did you get edgy when I did the impression of you?
Yeah.
Really? Like, really edgy?
Well, just more nervous. We talked about this. More nervous. That might be how I sound, because it's hard to tell if you're caricaturizing, or doing me. So
I just don't know what you're talking about with the
Shut
sound.
Up. Like Jimmy Quinlan.
Hey, man. If it fits.
Thank you, Stephen Rich. Yeah, Jimmy and I are brothers. Thank you, Stephen. That's awesome.
And I'll say this a couple more things. Let's go ahead and shout out V Mac.
V Mac!
I always have to wait oddly for you to do that. Yep. Valley Martial Arts Center. I will be training again this week. I come back much fatter after eating the Midwest food. So when I say I'm going to be rolling, what I really mean is you will just be rolling me on and off the mat because I'm so fat.
Like that PE toy. All right, thanks out there, Muggsy, Lisa Falconer, other Twitter people that are hitting us back and forth.
Yep.
I'm Kevin. This is Verbal Tap. Thanks for listening.
Good night and good fight, everybody. Mm-hmm.